speaking.
Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you? It's Kirsty.
Oh, hi, Kirsty Rice. How are you? I'm good. Hey, Kirsty, do you know how many fatties left us a message about the podcast last week?
Oh, I'm going to go with 987.
No. Two.
Two? Well, that's more than last week.
Yep, true, true. We seem to be getting somewhere. Hey, did you get that expat budget stuff done?
Oh my God, it's huge. It's big. There's some big, big changes happening in my head in regards to money at the moment. It's going to be huge for us. But do you want to do a podcast and we'll talk about it some more?
Yeah, good idea. Let's do it.
Welcome back to our new and improved Two Fat Expats podcast, where we talk about all things expat, screwing up our expat children, finding the best expat locations to live, and not blowing our expat dough. How's your big fat expat week been, Nikki Moffat? Still got the influenza?
I think I've tapped out of the influenza, hopefully. But the dry, cold air still makes me cough a bit and I can't laugh very much. So maybe I've still got the dregs.
Yeah, is that when you do that laugh where you start laughing maniacally and it turns into this revolting cough and people look at you in horror and, you know, walk away?
Pretty much. That's how it goes.
Now, if people are wondering what we're talking about when we mention the new and improved format, maybe head back to last week's show and take a look. You'll find it in your menu on iTunes under New Format, Start Here. Or if you're following us on your phone in your episodes, look for the one called New Format, Start Here. And also, before we get started, dear listener, have you talked to us yet? Have you sent a message? You know how to do that, right? Nikki, tell them how they can do that.
Go to our website, www.truefatexpats.com, and follow the prompts. There's really only one prompt. It's a microphone on the side of the page. Press it and send us a message.
Okay, so we're going to tell you how to do that over and over and over until we make you do it. We want to hear from you.
So last week we spoke about in the podcast about maintaining relationships when one partner travels, if you remember that conversation, and we talked about our own experiences. Zoe commented on the post that you put on the Facebook group, Kirsty,
yeah,
and talked about what she did when her partner traveled. So I called her and had a quick conversation with her. Well, let's say it wasn't quick. It was 30 minutes, but I edited it down to 6 minutes. And I am very proud of that.
Because Zoe had all those great tips, right? Like that. I remember that's what I really liked about her post, where she was talking about all these things that they do when her husband traveled to sort of keep them connected as a family.
That's right. So Zoe has a very interesting, Zoe and her husband have a great philosophy that they'll tell you about along the lines of FIFO, which traditionally means fly in, fly out, but in their relationship, it means something slightly different. So should we have a little listen?
Oh, I would love that.
To be honest, I must put this first. My husband's not a great chatter. So I have to say it does help that I'm a big extrovert. So I keep the conversation going and, you know, he'll phone me when he's away, he'll phone me and I'll just tell him the most arbitrary crap that happened that day. You know, we've got two puppies and we've got two kids, so, you know, things happen, arbitrary things like the dog dug a hole or, you know, but it does break the ice and bring him away from work and away from whatever's going on, you know, that he's not at home, and it brings him back into the fold of the house and the normal day-to-day humdrum that happens at home. It brings him back into your world, because I think what happens is that when your partner travels, and it doesn't matter which side of the relationship goes, they get removed from the fold of the house and they feel distance. They feel the distance more than just what it actually is. I've always said to people, when people say to me, oh, it's so tough that you have a husband that travels, I go, it's harder for him. But, you know, my husband would be like, can I say hello to my son? And I'd be like, sure. And I'd say, you know, come and chat to dad. And he'd be like, hi, how was your day? Fine. And then my husband would sit there in silence and so would the child. And I'd be like, so the way around that, as I found, is that when they were really little on a Saturday morning, I'd use Skype video days before FaceTime, you know, long before FaceTime. Used to position the PC at the dining room table, and I used to put the kids there with Lego. And they would just muck around and play between themselves. But it meant that he was involved and he could ask them, what you're making, and it would encourage a conversation going. So that's what I did with them when they were small. When they got older, you know, now they're teenagers, so now it's like, send your father a text message. Don't be so lazy. And they're like, Dad's on WhatsApp. We do a lot of, my eldest son's got a few, he's not a great conversationalist, he takes after his father. So I often say, just send him a photo of something funny that happened. You know, if you see something funny on the way to school, or, you know, something like that, just share it. We have a family group chat. Share it on there, you know, so that, you know, you get better at it. And the other thing that I used to do is, I don't know if you know the tune, I see the moon and the moon sees me and the moon sees somebody I wish to see. God bless the moon, God bless me, God bless somebody I wish to see. When my son was really little, my husband was in Saudi Arabia for 6 months. We didn't see him for 6 months. And so every night in the summer when it was warm enough, we'd go outside and we'd look for the moon, and then we'd say that little tune to the moon. And I'd say to my son, doesn't matter where Dad is in the world, he's looking at the same moon as you.
Mm.
And he loved that, you know. Didn't work so well on my youngest, because by that time he was tired and crying, I want my dad. I was like, too bad, so sad, so you go to sleep. Used to have a giant map of the world in his room when he was really little, and I used to move the passport photos around. My husband was traveling to different locations. So on a map like that, it doesn't look so far. At the time we were in South Africa, my husband was traveling, and it doesn't look so, the distance doesn't look so far, because to a child, they don't actually understand time, and they don't understand distance. They just know that Dad can't come home.
Yeah.
And they don't realize how far it is or how close it is or anything like that. They just know that their dad doesn't come home at night.
Yeah.
So we did things like that. And we did, you know, the whole calendar thing, counting down, putting an X on a calendar, buy a cheap calendar at the beginning of the year and let them cross out every day and so many days till Dad comes home. And then a week before, we'd do things like that. As far as relationships go, I have this thing, and I apologize about the language, but there's only one way to say it. We operate on a FIFO aspect. So it's fit in or fuck off. So when I go and visit him in his location with the kids over the summer or whatever, at the moment we're together, but when we've been apart, then we have to fit in with his long hours. We sleep late, we eat late, we do everything late because that's his schedule. But when he comes home, he has to FIFO. He has to fit in with us. So if he came home during school time, he'd have to buck up and just do dinner and bed and all those things. And if he wasn't used to eating at 6:30, well, sorry, but you know what? We have a 7-year-old and he needs to go to bed at 8, and he's not eating at 8:30. So you just have to eat then, you know. And it was trial and error. In the beginning, I'd try and make everybody happy, but I was the one left with a child out of routine for 2 weeks after he left, and crying because they want their dad, but also miserable because their routine was completely and utterly arse about face.
Yeah.
The other thing is, when your partner travels, they're always the good guy. They come home from wherever they've been. They haven't been shouting at the kids for 2 weeks. They're the ones that have something in their bag from their location that they've been to, a little present, whether it's whether it's Lego or whatever. It doesn't matter what it is that the child likes, but they bring something back. And you're the one that's always there. And the resentment starts to feel almost as if you resent it. Maybe it's not true, but you kind of start going like, why am I the one that's always doing the shouting, the screaming, the disciplining, the go sit on the stairs and don't talk to me like that behavior? And then Dad comes home and it's like, oh, Dad, my favorite man. And I'm like, so what we did for a while when the kids were small was, my husband would buy something and he would hide it, and then he would give it to me or throw it into my handbag at the airport. Usually like a little Lego minifigure. It didn't have to be a big thing. It could be a Chupa Chupa sucker or something like that. And I would give it to him. It would be from me. So now I'm not always the Wicked Witch of the West. Now, you know, I'm the fun person. Immigration lawyer once asked me, is this a marriage of convenience? I looked at him and was like, what makes you think anything about this lifestyle is convenient? Luckily, she had a very good sense of humor and burst out laughing and stamped the passports and off we went.
Oh my gosh, she's hysterical. I love it. Fit in or f*** off. That's gold. There was one thing with Zoe's that I just absolutely love. I just loved the beauty of the, it doesn't matter where Dad is, you still see the same moon. And you know, it was a beautiful thing. And with kids, it is that simple. They do think that. I mean, even now, my boys are 14 and 11. And when I left last time, we each took a seashell each, and we put the seashell in our pockets that we'd whenever we missed each other, we'd just pull out the seashell and we'd think about each other or with our own seashell. And I think you can do things like that with kids so easily.
Yeah. I think also the advice about teenagers and how encouraging them to communicate with their parents through photos and things like that, just little things as they get older and probably less communicative, I thought that was also really great advice. And the other thing is, Zoe emailed me the next day and she had talked about our conversation with her husband and he had some things to add. And he said, it's all well as good as long as the person who is traveling also puts the time aside to work on the communication. So he said, you know, putting off a drink at the hotel bar or what, you know, leaving watching the footy game till later or whatever is going to fit in with home time zone is totally worth it. So you can spend more time with your family at home and sort of keep involved that way. So that was a good little add-on.
Yeah. Like if one of you isn't making the effort, the other one can start to feel a bit cheesed off with it all. Now, we had the flip of this, and that was Christine, who posted in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group about her husband is about to finish his travelling time. And she's a little worried. She said that after 20 years of travelling for work, her husband has just left for his last trip to China. After this week, he'll start a new career that'll keep him close to home. Kids and I are beyond thrilled to have him around more, but I must admit I'm a bit nervous. We always joke about our marriage working because of the time apart. I'm sure someone has some good advice for me. And she got so much great advice. But I did ring her and asked to have a quick chat. I'll just play that interview for you now.
Right when we got married, he started traveling. So it's been a long time.
And so I gather pre-children, was he traveling like all through your pregnancy?
He was. Pre-children, he took a position in England. So he was gone 3-4 weeks out. And then he'd come home for a week. And I was getting my master's degree, so time flew by. But and then when I was pregnant with the kids, he was gone most of the time, came back for all their births, then had our fifth one in England. But
Did you just say fifth child? So you had 5 children with a husband who was constantly on the road.
Yes. And we had 4. And then we had 7-year-old and... No, we were done. And then, surprise.
So he suddenly says, okay, I'm coming home. Has he arrived home yet, or is this yet to happen?
No, he decided that he was done kind of with the corporate world and traveling and missing out on everything. And so he quit his job, gave his notice, and decided that he's going to buy a business kind of at near our vacation home. And we live near a lake in the summers, and completely changing career paths, which is wonderful. I think it'll be great. But now I'm starting to panic. I was taking him to the airport on Sunday for his last week in China. And I thought, oh, wait, I won't be able to do this anymore. An easy week with cereal for dinner. And I don't know. I just started to think, oh, what if we don't like each other anymore? I don't know. It's nice when he's home. We always have his favorite dinners. We go out to his favorite restaurants. It's special. It's nice. And, you know, there's always a birthday or something to celebrate when he's home. But then he leaves and it's kind of relaxed and nice. And I don't know. I feel like I'm just busy all the time when he's gone. You know, my full-time job isn't changing. I still have the 5 kids and everything to do. I feel like what he's doing is changing, but I don't know how that'll fit into just our daily life.
Over the years, have you sort of thought, God, I wish he was at home, or gee, it'd be easier if he was here? Are you kind of shocked by your reaction, or were you someone that was always like, no, I'm quite happy for him to go?
No, I mean, it was always wonderful when he was home, but after a few weeks, I kind of would say, don't you have a trip coming up? Isn't it time that you went somewhere? Aren't you needed elsewhere? But it was always, you know, and good fun, you know. It's never easy when he's gone. It's always much easier when he's here, but it's different and relaxed. I brought it up to the kids today. You know, I said, my older boys, 12 and 15, and I said, you know, Daddy's going to be here all the time. And, you know, my oldest thought, oh, my goodness. And they just, you know, they kind of looked at me like, oh, he will. That will be different. I thought, I'm excited for it, but
that means daddy's around all the time. And the one was so excited. He said, oh, good, we could have, you know, we can barbecue all the time.
And do you think your husband has any idea that all of this stuff is going on in your head?
No idea. Because I think it struck me kind of as we were driving at 3:30 in the morning to the airport. And earlier in the week, I had said, there's no way I'm taking, you know, 3:30 in the morning, you get a ride to the airport. And then I thought, well, no, you know, early on, I would have taken him. You know, he never would have had a driver come get him. So I thought, oh, it's your last trip. I'll take you. 3:30 in the morning. Who cares? And so as he's, you know, on his phone, texting, doing whatever, I'm just thinking and starting to panic. And then on the whole ride home, I was just very, you know, emotional about how I can remember those first trips, you know, where it was exciting. And you know, I'd help him pack for his first, you know, overseas trips. And
I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, I remember I used to sometimes cry after I dropped my husband off.
Oh, yeah.
Which I cannot,
I can remember that.
I cannot imagine at all now.
No, not at all. But and then even being pregnant, or, you know, when he'd come home, I'd have so much. I think three of the five times I was pregnant, I think I told him on the way home from the airport. You know, I couldn't keep it to myself. You know, I found out while he was gone on a business trip, and you know, between the airport and home, I had, you know, to spill it, you know, while I'm driving him.
It's the end of an era.
So, yes, definitely.
Excellent. I loved her. I loved her, the absolute trepidation that she has, and she really does have, and was very honest about it. Just the horror of it. And I also loved you two talking about stories about what you used to do in the olden days, in the beginning.
I do. I remember I used to cry when I dropped Greg off, and now I don't even go to the airport. Do you know, I don't even pick him up, and I don't even expect him to pick me up. I thought one of the pieces of advice was from Martin, who said that when Christine's husband does return home, they should really look at making sure they both had some space in the house for themselves, because so many people talked about it almost in the same way that I think, you know, our parents' generation talked about retirement, in that, you know, suddenly the partner was home full time and they were stuck with each other all day. You know, I know mum worked until she was 70, but my husband's mother really had that same feeling of horror of what was she going to do with G's dad when he came home full time, because she didn't know what to do with him in the house all day. But I thought, in regards to expats, it comes back again to that whole thing where in expat relationships, so much of your partner's career impacts your entire life, you know, whether it's the housing package, yeah, or the schooling package or the insurance or the lack of all those things, you know, that you lose some choices of, you know, what your family life is going to look like. And, you know, there was a real thing with Christine of, you know, I have sorted my life out. I've had five kids while you've traveled everywhere. We've got this covered. We don't really know how to do this with you around. Do you know, it was
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and what a champion. Five kids.
But you know, she really was sort of worried about him taking that from her. And you know, that came up in a lot of the comments. A lot of people were saying, you know, I feel like, you know, where he started driving the kids to school, and I was like, hey, that's my job. You know, that's what I do. Yeah. I think it's fine for the little breaks when you go, oh, well, this is a bit of a treat, but I don't know if I want to give up my time in the car with my teen, who that's the one time of the day they talk to me.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, it's a tough gig, and we wish Christine all the best, and we hope for an update from Christine in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Check back in and see how she's going. Now, expat tech, what do you use to sort of manage your podcasts? Because I just have them all in my phone at the moment, and it's a great big giant mess, and I'd really like to just delete them all and start again. What do you do?
Well, I do that every few months because I download so many, I listen to so many different ones, and then every so often I just delete them all. And I think if I can't remember to re-put them on, then they weren't that important to me.
Yeah.
That's one thing I do, sort of every 3 to 6 months. And I do, they're all on my phone and I do manage them that way, and I use an app. And the Podcast Addict, because I know you're an iTunes girl because you've got an iPhone and I don't. I download them in the house on the Wi-Fi, and then when I play them, they automatically delete. So I'm sure yours do too. That's the setting you've got set. Mm. And that's kind of it. That's the only way I manage them. But every few months I do just delete them all because I do listen to so many new ones all the time. Mm-hmm. And then I just end up with my trusty favorites. Is there a better way? Am I doing it wrong?
No, I don't think there is. But so when you say delete them all, does that mean you unsubscribe?
Yes.
Wow. Yes. That I unsubscribe. Is...
Well, I just think I do listen to a lot, and I listen to a lot that are series, that are finite series. So I'll listen to them all, and then they're sitting. I mean, they're not sitting there because the data's gone, but the name and the picture is still sitting in my app, and I don't need it because I've listened to it. Like S Town, gone. Dirty John, gone.
Yeah,
don't need them anymore.
But what about Dirty John? Didn't they come back with the Obama one? And oh no, that was the Oprah one, wasn't it? Came back with the Obama one. But Dirty John, that's right. Dirty John came back with that bonus episode where they went to the town hall and they talked all about him. And I was quite happy to have listened to that. Actually, it was sort of about the guy, you know, the voice behind Dirty John, the guy that did all the narrating, and they had an evening with him, so that was kind of cool. But I'm with you. I think I've just got to bite the bullet and unsubscribe. But you do realize, Nikki, we've now just told everyone, hey, ditch us and go and see what happens if you can't remember us. But then again, that's how
I
should
never
be,
unsubscribe to Two Fat Expats. I never unsubscribe to Two Fat Expats, and if I did, it would be the first one I put back on.
No, but I think that's warranted though, right? Because if like you said, if you're not missing them, well, you know, they shouldn't be there. You should be looking always for sort of new entertainment, and maybe you'll go back to it. But I think that's a fair call. Okay, expat kids. I wanted to talk about an article that I'd seen pop up in the New York Times. It's written by a woman called Stevie Trujillo, and she's an expat. And the title of the article is called The Wager of Raising a Child Abroad. And it was just this really beautiful post about the fact that she was living in a country that wasn't her passport country and raising her child there with her husband. And they'd lived, I think, in about 8 different countries, so it felt very familiar to me. But what was interesting was she was saying about her, you know, going to the markets, and, you know, they're in France and going to the markets, and, you know, it was all described so beautifully about getting the baguette and her child speaking in French, and just her wonder of how is this all going to pan out? And there was a particular phrase at the end of it where she'd kind of wagered back and forth with, you know, is this the right thing? Is this the wrong thing? You know, how will it be? She said, so for now, with my basket in one hand and my daughter's little palm in the other, we'll continue to walk the world in search of people, spaces, and moments that move our soul and gather them into a living piece of art. And I don't know this word, a bricolage of memories called home. This, I think, is what it feels like to be a citizen of the world. What will my multicultural daughter identify with? And it really struck with me. I'm actually going to look up that word, Nikki, while we're talking about it. But I just, what did you think?
No, I did too, because it's a question every parent asks themselves when they bring a child into this environment. What will they do? How will they identify as home? What will home be? Where will home be? Am I providing them enough of a base so they have somewhere that they can call home? Is home where the family is, or is home a place? What is home? What is home? And, you know, I think that it's so true. Mm. It's just so true. And if you ask you know, even when people say, you know, where are you from? And you would say, well, I don't know what you would say, but I say I'm Australian, but we've lived overseas for the last 15 years in, you know, 5 countries. Mm. Because I think you can't say I'm Australian without including that part of it, because that's really feels to me like a big part of my life.
Yeah. I think it depends on me who I'm talking to. You know, I think probably when I'm in Australia, bizarrely, I would say, but I've lived away, by way of explanation of why the next piece of our conversation is going to be so strange. Do you know, like why I don't, you know, why I'm not going to have all the bits they think I'm going to have, do you know, to participate with in the conversation. But probably as an expat, I would meet people abroad and just say, oh, I'm Australian. Now, a bricolage, by the way, is a construction or creation from a diverse range of available things. What a clever word to use.
Good use of language, Stevie.
Well done, Stevie.
And I agree. And it's interesting because I have a friend here and he is a TCK. He grew up in Hong Kong and Indonesia and other places, but he spent the last 15 years or so in the States, and now he's moved away with his family and come here. And I said to him, when we talk a lot about TCKs and grown up TCKs, I said, you know, how do you answer that question? And he said, well, when you were growing up, you just could look at the person and tell what kind of answer you're going to give, which is very similar to what you said.
Mm.
So it's such a complex question, and it's not even now, like, you know, he sounds American, he looks American, but if someone asks him that question, he says he always just still determines how much information he's going to give because of it. And it was interesting the other day, I belong to a Facebook group which is a lot of third culture kids, and it's called something about third culture kids. I can't remember specifically right now, but someone posted in there and said, this, by the way, this group is public, and I often feel that I am editing my responses because all my Facebook friends can see what I write in a public response. And if this group was private or closed, then I would change the way I responded to some things, or I would respond to more things. So the administrator changed the group to a closed setting. And then masses of people came out and said, oh, thank you for saying that. I felt the same way. You know, I have friends who live in this country with me and have known me for 10 years here, but that's not who I feel I am. I've got this whole other side of me, and this is a place that I think that I can bring that side of me out. So I just think that it's, you know, it's so hard to know. Yeah. I don't know.
And people and kids don't bring it out. You know, my first child was about to say back to Australia, but she'd never leave there to go back, right? But she went to live in Australia at 15, and my second daughter went at 14. And I find it really interesting that they have other friends that they've met, expat kids. And I heard my girls talking about a particular person who talked a lot about her expat country, and I'm not going to say where it is, so let's just say it was
Wakanda.
Okay. So she would feel the need to tell everybody about Wakanda. You know, when I was in Wakanda, you know, in Wakanda we did this, in Wakanda we did that, you know, or life is better in Wakanda, or it's not, do you know, or there was nothing to do or whatever. It didn't matter, but she would reference Wakanda. And I was listening to my girls tell someone else, an adult, by way of explanation, oh, you just don't talk about your life, you know, your expat life that you had, because nobody cares and nobody wants to know. It's not interesting to them. And they weren't saying it in a woe is me. They were saying it in a, of course people don't care because they have no reference point. They can't join in with you. Yeah. They can't be a part of it. They can only nod politely and say, great, that's great, you know, but it means nothing to them. But I also think with my girls, what has happened, and it's really becoming apparent this year, that my second child is really settling in. And I don't know if you remember, Nikki, it was her that came home on that first holiday and was in tears and didn't want to go back. And she asked me, you know, if I'm really, really good and I get really good grades, can you let me stay in Doha? And it was the most revolting, awful experience, because I wanted her to stay. But I knew it wasn't the right parenting thing to say, sure thing, let's drop the whole idea, do you know, which is what I did with my first child as well. I wanted to say on the first day, this was a really big mistake. Let's all go home now and just write it off as a bad idea. But as it's turned out, you know, for us personally, we have got everything out of it that we were hoping to get. You know, we wanted them to get a baseline of friends, to feel Australian, to understand that pop culture, to be part of it. My second child rang me today because she's interested in doing a trip next year where you go away. You know, you can choose a course overseas and go away. And I was saying to her, you know, that's a lot of money and I'm not sure about that. And one of the things I said was, but you would miss out on coming back to Doha because it's in that April holiday. And she said, now this is only 6 months later, right? She says, yeah, but Mum, I think by this time next year, I probably won't mind that much if I don't go back to Doha. And I was like, wow. Oh. And I said, why is that? And she said, because everyone's moving on. You know, my best friend from Doha, she'll be gone this summer. And, you know, all it will take is one other person to go. And, you know, she said, I'm just starting to feel, I don't feel that great pull to be back there. Now, I could never have imagined that. You know, we have to, I think, you know, we tie ourselves up in knots about this stuff as expats when we talk about our kids and what will happen. And I was listening to her talk today, and while she's still got her little American accent and she still hangs on to all things expat, she is obviously growing in a way where she's like, I'm settling in somewhere. I'm feeling, you know, I'm not feeling that pull. So it's
resilience, yes, adaptability, all the things that we hope for our children, maturity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I was going to say too, Nikki, is I noticed in the Facebook group we had someone within our Two Fat Expats Facebook group who was actually an acquaintance of the author, and she said they're in a writing group together. So I thought that was interesting too. Had to be, didn't it, that we would have had a connection with someone.
Yes, here. Well, 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Da-da-da. Should we have a drum roll?
Expat money. All right. So this week I decided, you know, I was going to sit down and have the budget conversation with my husband. And I'm really, I have to say, a bit of background, and I'd love to hear about you and your husband, how it works, Nikki. But, you know, money conversations with my husband are never great. While we've been great, we can work together very, very well at house planning and, you know, designs and should we buy this or should we buy that. Our whole thing, we always turns into this awfulness when we sit down to look at the dreaded Excel spreadsheet of doom, where I feel from my end like he is lecturing me, and I think he feels that I'm not listening to him. So we never, every time we've gone down this path before, it's never been pretty. But I have to say, for the very first time ever the other night, we managed to have a conversation about money where I think we both were very respectful of each other. And we realized that before we can even do the budget, we both really need to go away and really think about our expenses. You know, they tell you whenever people are budgeting, you know, they say, okay, now get out your weekly, you know, your credit card statements and your debit card statements and write them all down and find out what your expenses are. But one of the things that came really clear with Greg and I was we realized that we'd really lost a grip of what those real expenses were now, you know, with so many different things happening in our lives. Yeah. And also for me, subscriptions, Nikki, you know, like I'll subscribe to a newspaper, subscribe to an app, subscribe to whatever and really not sort of think much about it, you know, whether it's $5 here or, you know, 20 bucks a year here or, you know, 35. And even if it's stuff with blogging and, you know, 12 months for domain fees and whatever. So we kind of realized that we had a much bigger job than what we thought. And we've also, so we've sort of scheduled that we are going to get together again on the weekend and go through what we've discovered. You know, we've put ourselves on a deadline of, okay, you go away, have a look at your expenses, what you've got, what I've got. Then we'll go back and we'll do this together. What happens with you? What are your money conversations?
Well, just to say that a good thing for resetting on all these subscriptions and all the things you do in your life is moving countries.
Yes.
Because you cancel everything. You cancel your yes. Netflix and you pay TV and your gym subscription and you're all back to zero.
Yes, that's very true.
I just realized that when we recently did that. And look, I don't know how you and your husband, what kind of families you come from, because I think it depends how you grew up. So what the attitude in your house was as well to those kinds of things. So did your parents encourage you to understand how money worked or how they budgeted, or did you just like me get to live your life pretty cushy and, you know, not everything, but, you know, no one ever said, you know, this is what I'm giving up so you can go and do this or whatever. So I think that my husband and I grew up with very different backgrounds
right.
in that. And we also used to have much more equal income.
Yes.
So sometimes what I feel in the conversation is I'm being not lectured, but I'm being sort of questioned about the expenses.
Yes.
Whereas not necessarily the case, but it's how I feel. Like why am I the one earning the money and you're the one spending
right.
it?
Yeah, and that's not a nice way to feel.
No, and you know, it's actually not, probably not what happens, but it's how I feel. And I've got to get over myself about that. So that's kind of the conversations we have. So we've recently, you know, put down this year as being a year that we want to get on top of all
yes.
those things. And so the first thing we do have to do is tax returns in three countries. Oh, so, you yeah. know, we're just working on that
yeah.
now.
And
then once we get past that, that's
is
the
that
next
something,
step.
Nikki, that you could just engage an accountant to do for you?
Certainly it is, but it's the information gathering. And
right.
I don't know, my heart and my thoughts go out to every American, because everyone that has a tax liability or some kind of connection to America has to submit something called the FBAR, which is the foreign banks and whatever, whatever, whatever. Anyway, you have to give the details of the account name and address of every single bank account or fund or any piece of money in the world that you own anywhere in any country, and the highest balance in that account over the course of the year. Like, you know, that's not a number that just jumps out at you. It's not a number they send you in the annual
yeah.
statements. You know, your highest balance for the year was this. So, you know, it's just a lot of
yes.
work. And you know, and when you're doing it together in more than one country, you have to consider, you know, which country gets this. And if I claim this, does this go against something in this country? I mean, it just is a very, you know, I know I'm not the only person facing it. There's a lot of people in the same situation as us. It's just, it's certainly accountants do it all, but the putting together and the going backwards and forwards and the dealing with all the people in the different countries, and it's quite a complex situation.
So you still have to do an American one?
Because we own our
house.
Oh, yes.
Of course. Right. Got it.
And also we received a W-2, which is from the company in America, because some part of a small, tiny bonus payment that my husband got last year was paid by the American part of the company. So
yes.
They send you one. So once they send you one, you have to go through the whole process. So
yeah.
yes. That's how
yeah.
it works.
And I guess what I would love to hear about from Fatties as well is who they bank with. Because, you know, one of the things in Australia when people talk about money management is they're always looking at, you know, great banks that you can bank with where you don't get charged any fees for, you know, debits and, you know, using your debit card, although now in Australia they've just about all banks have just about got rid of those fees. But also people talk about these amazing mortgage rates that you can get. And, of course, none of these things really apply to expats, because I know in Australia if you have a mortgage, you know, well, it can be really hard to get a mortgage as an expat. and you will get a special rate that's expat rated, and it's not as pretty as everybody else's.
It's not a low one.
And that was one of the other things I was going to say about my husband too, is I've realised, you know, while we have a very happy marriage and we get on very well and we parent very well and all those things, we do find our way around things in a very different way, like the way we discuss things, even the directions we take. Like I when I sit in the car with him, I think, oh, I wouldn't have gone this way. I would have turned right to get here.
Oh, my God. You know,
I wouldn't have done it this way. I wouldn't have said it that way. And one of the things the other night was we have an offset account. He was talking about our interest rate like it was the interest we were getting on our money, with me sitting there going, hang on, isn't that the interest we owe on our money? And, you know, already we were off to a start where I've had to go, hang on, you know, what are you talking about? And I think that's a lot of our problem as well. We just the way we explain things and read things and see things are so different.
And that's the same with me. So that's the same with my husband and I, and our brains work almost polar opposites. So I'll say to him, we're talking about the same thing, but you're coming at it a different way. And I think that he's inflexible, and he says, no, you're wrong. You know, this is not what's happening. And what he hears is me saying, you're wrong, I'm right, the answer's the same. And so now whenever we get into a discussion about things, he'll say, is this one of these situations where, like, we're talking about the same thing but we're coming at it different ways? And he does it to really, he knows it really presses my buttons, because when we're in the situation when it's happening, it's not fun. But he uses it as a sarcasm, as a tool, as a tool in our relationship, yes, to press my buttons.
So I'm thinking what I'm going to do next week is actually record my budget conversation with Greg, like when we go through it all together. Because I'm thinking, if I record it, we may both be careful about the tone that we use and what we sound like and, you know, what we say. And I think that could be, for anyone who's like my husband and I, or your husband and you, is maybe that's a way to sort of go. And also a great thing to keep, to go, well, this is what we said we wanted to do. This is what we said the aims were. This is what we wanted to do. And I actually wonder if what the clever thing to do is to be really clear and make it really simple. Tonight we're going to work out exactly what our expenses are, you know, and then day two we are going to work out, you know, exactly how much money we make, you know, day three we're going to work out, just make it really clear, and you stop right there. You don't go any further. You just take it in little tiny bites until you can sort of get on top of it.
I think that's a good idea, and I'll look forward to that recording.
All right. Well, I will. I'll record it, and if he lets me, I'll share a little bit of it next week if he says that we can.
Yeah.
Now, just on that, because you kind of touched on the house you grow up in and whatever, and, you know, I have – my parents are both accountants. Neither of their accounting gene rubbed off on my sister and I. We are both not remotely interested in numbers or figures or how they work. And so in our house, it was a bizarre thing of where I think probably my mum probably looked after the money, but you would have been under the illusion that my dad was very much in control of it. So in that he was the CEO of a company, he worked longer hours, he made more money. But I'm guessing, because that's what, later in their marriage, it was very much her that did online banking and, you know, paid things, moved things, did things. So I saw something on the television, I saw something come up in my Facebook feed about The Drum, which is a political show in Australia, and they were talking about tax cuts and what corporate tax cuts actually mean to everyday Australians. And the message was really just about that politicians try and tell us that corporate tax cuts mean that money is going to dribble down to everyday Australians, and that is a complete load of bollocks, and that really it never makes its way down because that money tends to go back to shareholders and whatever. But I was watching, and I know a woman who you, Nikki, really like, Rebecca Huntley. One of the people talking about it, because she's a social commentator and, you know, has a PhD and she's a very clever woman. She was there with another female economist. But it sort of flashed past my feed and I really thought about that saying about you can't be what you can't see, and how that never would have happened when I was a kid. You never would have seen two women who were in their 40s on the telly talking about tax cuts and money and the government as such. That would have been a conversation that was reserved solely for men in suits.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Whereas now I see it and I think nothing of it.
Yeah. Very quick, because I know we've gone on, but location. I posted something in the Two Fat Expats group this week about filling the gaps. I'm jealous of people living in, and there was a gap, and then because I would do anything to be able to, and another gap. And the post went nuts of people saying where they'd rather be right now, except for you, Nikki, because you're very happy where you are right now. You love where you are.
I am loving it. Honestly, my Insta stories, people must be so sick of them because it's the same thing every day. Here's the sunshine and snow and in Hamburg and it's awesome. It's -6, but I'm loving it. Like, honestly, I'm a whole new person and I just understand even more my relationship with blue skies and sunshine. But I would say one little thing. I would give anywhere to be somewhere where someone would iron my sheets so I could sleep in a hotel bed.
I don't know if anyone's ever ironed my sheets.
Are you sure? I think you should go and ask some questions.
I can tell you no one's ironing my sheets now and I don't iron my sheets. Do you iron your sheets in Hamburg?
What are you, crazy? I don't iron. The iron's in the back of the storage cupboard. No, I don't iron at all, but I did have iron sheets for 9 years of my life, my spoilt expat princess phase, and I really do miss iron sheets. I miss a lot of other things about having someone around to help out with things, but I it's so weird because I don't really love hotel beds or anything. I just my own sheets ironed is very special to me.
And just on that note about, you know, I'd much rather be because I'm jealous of people doing blah blah blah, I'll put a link to that post in the running sheet because it's a really good one to look at if you're thinking of moving somewhere, because you can sort of, what I found from reading everybody's posts was there's some common themes come up of countries and cities that people really miss and really would do anything to go back to. And there's some ones that would really surprise you as well. And I think it's, you know, it's different than asking the question, where was your favorite location? Because people can never say what their favorite is, but people can say things that they genuinely miss about a place. And, you know, if someone asked me, I would not say that Calgary was my favorite location, but it's definitely one of the things I am missing now, and it did take 10 years, but is I do miss that crunchy crisp snow, you know, the sound that snow makes when you step on it, and that fresh, clean, clear, dry air, and blue skies. And it's freezing, but if you've got enough clothes on and you've got all the right things, there is nothing that's so, you know, sort of clean and beautiful than that sound and that feeling. And you cannot replicate it without being surrounded by snow. But, you know, there I was when I left Canada saying, I will never miss the snow. I will never miss the cold. This was just too much. You know, I'm over it. But, yeah, I do now. Nikki, what are you reading? What are you watching? Any podcasts, just quickly?
Two quick things. Watching Dark on Netflix. Now, Dark is actually a series in German, but you'll find it on your Netflix as well. There were so many ads for it here, like in the subway. Every time I go to the train, I'd see Dark Netflix. I was like, oh, that's weird. And then I heard it discussed on an English speaking podcast, at one of the podcasts I listened to. But it comes two ways. It comes as in German with subtitles, or it comes dubbed in English. And if you watch it dubbed in English, you just can't watch it because the mouths are just crazy. I don't know how you feel about watching dubbed things, but it just, it doesn't, what they have to say in English English does not equate at all with obviously what they say in German.
Yeah.
So when I'm, and then, so I changed it to be in German, but actually when I first changed it to German, I accidentally changed it to narration. So it was called German with description.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever had that? Yes. I've never had
that. It's kind of like when you get watch the director's cut and the director walks you through every piece of the movie, that same sort of thing, isn't it? So is it for people who are sight?
Yeah, I think it must be, yeah. Anyway, so then I worked it out.
So would you recommend it?
I would recommend it. It has been referred to as the German Stranger Things.
Oh.
So I'm putting it out there for that. I thought that might interest you.
Wow.
And but it is slow because I am watching it in German. But with subtitles, I'm not kidding myself. The other thing I'm watching is, which is new and everyone's watching it and it's fantastic and everyone's talking about it, is 7 Seconds.
Ah.
It's new on Netflix. It's got all the buzz. So it's a white police officer off duty. He's on the phone in the car on the way to hospital to see his wife who's pregnant and has some sort of complication. So he's trying to desperately to get to the hospital to be with her. And he's involved in what basically becomes a hit and run with a black teen in modern America. So it's got all the complexities and issues that are facing that particular country at the moment, and it's really, so far so good. I'm only a couple of episodes in, but I'm really enjoying it.
Right.
What about you for telly?
For me, for telly, ABC iView, watching The Larrikin and The Leader, which is a Bob Hawke thing, and it's Bob Hawke was the Prime Minister of Australia in the 80s, and you know, there's always conversations about whether he would have any hope of being the Prime Minister in the current day because of how much he played up and was a larrikin and a real bloke of a drinker and a partier and whatever. But really, I have found it really insightful. I haven't finished it. But even my children have found it quite insightful to sort of talk about things like Tiananmen Square and his reaction to that and the tears and just how human he was. It really, I don't think politicians can be that human anymore. I don't think they can show so much of themselves. Bob Hawke was having an affair with the woman who was writing his biography at the time. Bob was very much in love with this woman because he married her, and he's still married to her, you know, after he separated from his wife.
Yes, but then I think some maybe Americans listening would think that you could get away with all that and still lead your country.
Yes. So it's hard to say. Oh, yeah.
It's hard to say. It's interesting times in politics, but yes, I've heard that it's very good.
Okay, so Larrikin the Leader, as a family, we are watching The Americans. We're on season one. I've kind of, you know, we tried it a couple of times, Greg and I, but we're a bit stuck and thought, all right, we'll do it again. We're making our way through it, enjoying it, but there are a couple of scenes where we've gone, whoop, we're going to have to fast forward this bit, kids. Just raunchy scenes.
Oh, I was going to say there's some very raunchy scenes,
yeah, but I've got my finger hovered over the fast forward button, and it's always raunchy scenes are so much more comedic when they're done in triple speed. Australian Story, I watched the episode presented by Magda Savansky on Tiny Abbott's sister and her marriage. And I'm really on the Australian politics bent this one, but Tiny Abbott, former Prime Minister and very much against same-sex marriage and very vocal about why he didn't believe in same-sex marriage. And the whole time there was a story alongside of that of his sister was gay and in a very loving relationship. And it's just a fantastic Australian story. Definitely, Nikki, go and see if you can watch it. I was howling at the end of it because, you know, you realise what the plebiscite put people through, but also the insight into, because both of these women were married with children and then fell in love. And so you see the pain that it caused these women. Do you know, they didn't want to hurt their husbands, they didn't want to hurt their kids, but they were madly in love. And, you know, you just see the pain on their faces when they tell you there's so many things that they did wrong and that they wish they could do again. It's really, really good to watch. don't think I haven't got a new podcast. I thought I'd chuck in the New York Times movies. They had the top movies for 2017 because it really surprised me because there weren't a lot there where I went, oh yeah, that was fantastic. I was really shocked. But also I think because I tend to watch all my movies on planes these days and it really is luck of the draw of what's available. For me, probably the most surprisingly delightful movie that I watched was Table 19. Did you catch that one?
I didn't, and I'll tell you why after you tell me about Table 19.
Oh, yeah. No, I really liked it. A wedding woman who was hitched with the brother of the bride. Now, how does it work? He was in the wedding party in some way. He's the brother of either the bride or the groom. I can't remember. He's the brother of the bride. And so, yes, woman gets invited and it kind of transpires that you see that she was in a relationship with him. She was meant to be the maid of honour, but she broke up with him and he's now in another relationship. And it's all about being stuck on the really geek, dork, nobody wants to be on it table. It's not even the singles table. It's the hodgepodge of anyone that we didn't really quite know what to do with and we've stuck them on this table. And that is Table 19. And it's just a really beautiful movie. It's surprising in the end. You see all the stories of everybody that's on that table and it's a real mixture of people. Now, why didn't you get to see it? Tell me.
Oh, that's an awesome idea, though. I want to go see it. Well, I want to see it. I want to find a way to see it. Well, because I don't get to see many movies anymore because there's only two cinemas in Hamburg that play movies in English because the Germans are very big on dubbing.
Right.
So all the movies and the actors, everything you see and the ads just has it all in German. So I just was, when you wrote this, you know, what was your favorite movie? I was like, I don't know. I was thinking, you know, I wonder, like Brad Pitt, when you see him talk, I'm like, does the same voice actor play Brad Pitt in every movie? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, or does Brad Pitt sound different in every movie? I don't know. I have to go and find out now. Yeah. Now that's my mission. I'm going to report.
Can you please? Yes. I want to know that too.
How the Germans dub their movies.
Yes. I want to know that. Okay. All right, Nikki, that's us for this week. It was lovely chatting to you again. And, oh, now, we haven't told people once how to drop us a line or leave us a message.
Well, we have told them one time. What they can do is go to www.tiffandexpats.com and click on the microphone. That's one way to leave us a message. But there are lots of other ways to leave us messages too. You can contact us on Twitter at @TwoFatExpats. Or you can see us on Instagram, also at @TwoFatExpats. And we also have an email address, twofatexpats@gmail.com. Or you could leave us a rating and review on iTunes.
Oh, yes.
Just like Jojo Zepp did this week when she told us, well done, ladies, useful, fun information that fills the void when you are the lead expat away for years. So if you've got a comment, all comments are welcome. We'd love to hear from you as well. That's another way that you can leave us a message. Bye-bye.